You're listening to Dotto Tech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to Dotto Tech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you could join us today. This show, it's dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever it fits in your life, be it home, school, or work. Art Factor is my producer. Hey, Art, how you doing?
It's Wednesday. I love it. Life is good.
It's a good thing. We've got such a show. I'm actually really excited about some of the stuff. You know what the headline on the show is today?
Oh, I do. And
what is it?
Well, you've been jumping around the office all year. Death.
Death. We're going to talk death. But death from a social media perspective. Yes. It's tough to die online.
Well, because who's there to erase it once you go?
These are issues that we are going to be bringing up. It's a fascinating topic. There's not just a few, but a ton of issues around how we use our data after we're how others use our data after we're dead, how we gently remove ourselves from the situation so that we aren't erroneously sending tweets out after we're dead. That sort of stuff. There's a lot to it, and it's new to us.
Well, when you told me about the topic earlier today, I thought in my head, yeah, there was, I think, one or two guys on my Facebook that have passed away, and I'm sort of
and then
wondering,
all of a sudden you get a message to reconnect with them or something like that, and you say, no, I don't really want to reconnect with them right now because they're dead.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I don't know if should I keep them on my Facebook page because I feel like, okay, if I get rid of them, I mean, it's just there. And you know, it's not hurting me by having it, but on the same note, it's kind of a
sensitive topic.
Yes.
We've had thousands of years to work out rituals around death. Mm-hmm. As a society, but the internet's only been around for 20 years.
Right.
And I mean, I started to go through it, I guess, when I had an electronic address book for the first time, as I would clean out, because, you know, you end up with people that you're not in contact with anymore, or you end up with duplicate records because you're syncing with your BlackBerry and stuff like this. So I go through and clean it out. And I always have a difficult time cleaning out the people who've passed.
Mm-hmm.
I always say it's such a finality thing to erase them from my address book, but it's a difficult topic. But we're going to take it on head on because we have Adele McAleer, deathandlegacy.com. She's going to be talking to us. She's an expert on it, and we'll be talking about that. We're also going to be taking a look at one of the social sides of media, how to protect ourselves online through knowledge, through understanding all of how our information is used online. We've got guests in from the Digital Tattoo Project, which is a great project started by the University of BC about how basically everything we do online is the same as having a physical tattoo. It's going to be attached to us for our whole life. They've done a wonderful job on their site. And we're going to be doing some Twitter stuff, which I know you're going to like.
I'm a Twitterer.
I notice I don't subscribe to too many people's Twitter feeds, but I notice you do a lot of Twittering.
Well, I have a few different avenues for myself, you know, doing the radio things. And I'm also a comic and a foodie and a Canucks fan. So I think that I have a fairly good handle on Twitter. I'm not just pumping out where I'm performing. I'm not just annoying people during a Canucks game with every play. I'm not just showing pictures of food. It's just it's a culmination. I like to entertain people with a variety of things.
Well, you are an engaging guy, Art. And so, you know, I care about your Twitter feed. And the ones that I like is you put out bargains for wine and stuff like that. I actually retweet those. I don't do a lot of retweeting, but I retweet. You had some big bargain on wine.
Well, we were on location with a radio show at the 39th and Canby liquor store. And they were giving away free samples of wines that were over $800 worth of like seven different wines. So who would not want to be there?
And as liquor stores go, that one at 39th and Canby,
oh,
that's a good liquor store.
Absolutely.
That's a liquor store you could spend a lifetime at. They're there. We're also going to be taking a look at phones for seniors. We've got so many different things on the show. You are going to want to stick around. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech. One of my passions is the importance of all adults being included in the social media world. And I do a lot of speaking to parent groups talking about the importance of adults being on Facebook and in understanding the world of social media, understanding basically that the internet is a place, not a thing. And one of the resources that I always, always give out as a part of my talk is the Digital Tattoo Project. I am thrilled to welcome into studio Trish Roziel and Cindy Underhill from UBC, who are responsible for the development of what I think is one of the truly valuable resources to help us out online. So thanks for coming in, ladies.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
Now, Trish, you are from the Center for Teaching, Learning, and Technology.
I'm actually from the library.
Oh, you're from the library. Sorry. Yeah, and okay. Cindy is from the Center for Learning. Yeah, I had my notes crossed here. you're a teaching librarian.
I am.
Oh, good. So it's interesting how the whole concept of this site comes from your guys' area, which is all about developing resources and librarians, a real changing world in your lives where you used to be the holders of all this knowledge behind the Dewey Decimal System.
We manage the stuff.
You manage the stuff. And all of a sudden the stuff exploded well beyond you. Now you have to figure out how to teach people how to vet the stuff and what's valuable and what's not. Let's talk about the Digital Tattoo Project itself, which is a website, it's a resource, and basically the concept is everything that we do on the internet is as indelibly linked to us as though we did a physical tattoo, and we should think about it on those lines.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's it. We just are really gearing a lot of our work to trying to help our students, primarily at UBC, just make really informed choices about how they manage their online identity, because students today are using all sorts of tools and technologies. They're using Facebook, they're using Twitter, they're using Flickr, they're publishing stuff. And they're not always thinking about what the implications are of those decisions they make. Mm-hmm. And they quickly often find they do have a digital tattoo that they were never aware of.
And your site, as opposed to just scaring people and saying, don't do this because it's going to hurt you, you go into a lot of detail on where the content, where the data that we put forward is being used. I think that's it basically is informing us, because we can make an educated decision if we want to share it or if we don't. But the importance is to understand where it's going to be used.
Yeah, that was actually really important to in the design to us, that we offer some questions in each of the content areas so that people will think about their own presence online and make decisions that are right for them, because we all have different levels of comfort with what we share online and how we interact.
As you worked through this, now how old is the project?
3 years.
3 years, yeah. So 3 years ago, or 4 years ago when you started working on it, you were both probably on Facebook already. You were probably both engaged in social media.
Yeah.
Did anything change for you as you were working through the content and as you were seeing things? Is there anything that shocked you and you said, oh, I really feel uncomfortable about this?
For me, it's probably more some of the tools and applications and how they've developed over time that it just freaks me out a little bit.
Okay.
Things like some of the Google apps and the way that my contacts are shared, I'm much more, I guess, wary.
So have you changed your online habits as a result of working on the project?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You've actually changed. You're not just more aware, but you've changed them.
Some of them, yeah.
Well, how about you?
Yeah, I would say same. I think I when I started using Facebook in particular, because that was probably my first foray into these kinds of tools about 5 or 6 years ago, and I posted a lot more then than I have on my profile now. And that's a very deliberate decision, just based on learning myself a lot more about it and how other people are also using these tools to find me.
And you deal with a lot of the myths, I think. If you read through it, you overcome a lot of the myths of how the data is being used and who owns it and all those sorts of things. I always create or tell people this is almost like a workbook. You want to work through all of the different sections. And basically, at the end of it, you understand who's using what information and where.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the hope. I mean, we're really trying to, again, help people make an informed choice about how they want to present themselves online. But just building on what Cindy was mentioning, too, we really make it a focus of the work that we do, both through our tutorial, but in workshops that we teach and deliver and our students deliver, is really not trying to scare them into not using these tools, but just being aware of what the decisions you make, what will the impact be, and not trying to scare them about it, because that's not our thing.
That's crucial, because I think saying that tools are bad or saying that any of these things are bad, that's not the way to go. They're neither good nor bad. It's how we use them. They're net neutral.
Yeah.
Right. Right? And so bottom line is, it's the only people who can protect our privacy are ourselves.
Right.
And so we have to, you know, being cognizant of that as we move through. Now, when you started this project, was this administration determining we've got to inform our kids about this, or was this coming from the student population itself, the need for this?
I think it was, it definitely came from the student population. And I think the eye or the frame that we put around it is, you know, we're talking with students and helping students and professors think about using some of these tools, social media tools and other tools in their classrooms. So we really felt a responsibility for making sure that the decisions they were making were informed ones.
You said something really interesting there. You said professors.
Mm.
So this isn't just for kids. It's not just for students. All of us really are going to benefit from working through this information.
Yeah. And interestingly, we've been asked on a couple of occasions to develop a workshop for faculty members around digital tattoo issues, because they're facing some of the same things. Do I create a website for my research? You know, what kinds of things would I link to? What kinds of information would I put there? Do I want that out in public? Do I want it in a more protected space? So there.
What happens to my rights to that content
exactly.
if I share it in these different places? Mm-hmm. Because their knowledge is basically their what they sell, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because a lot of interest has been generated in particular also among teachers.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some really focused work in partnership with our teacher education office at UBC to deliver workshops to pre-service teachers who are going to be going out and working with students and are trying to navigate that relationship between themselves and their students when they are still themselves students.
Yes.
And that's been a really fruitful exploration. And now we do find that teachers are quite interested in our project. We field quite a number of questions and requests from them.
I was speaking to the College of Teachers, and your site was one that came up in the conversation there, because they're struggling with setting guidelines in place, as are, you know, the teachers' union struggling, the Ministry of Education. In British Columbia, Every facet of education or every educational level is having the exact same conversations. Mm-hmm. How do we protect our teachers? But how do we, you know, we don't want them to not engage. I think we've come to that point now where we understand that it's far too rich a world to that engagement has to be there.
Well, and it goes right back to what you were saying. Do we really want to not be using tools that are useful and just say no and have it be a black and white conversation? Or do you want to kind of help people make choices?
And
that makes sense.
At the end, it's the one thing. If you master the technology, then you're the one in charge. And mastering the technology means understanding. And part of that is going through and working through your site, because that gives you the information you need in order to make informed decisions, in order to make the world a little bit safer place for you and for yours. The site, digitaltattoo.ubc.ca. I encourage everybody to visit the site. It is an essential thing to work through. Certainly there'll be links at our page. And Trish and Cindy, I thank you very much for your work. I think that you've done a lot of good for the general population here in the province and for students all of us everywhere. So I congratulate you. I thank you for the effort. And I hope that you continue and keep adding more good content to the site.
Great.
Thanks very much.
You're listening to DottoTech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Susan Amell is photoelectronics manager at London Drugs. And one of the really exciting new features in a lot of digital cameras is video mode. Now, we've had video for a long time, but video on a camera used to be analogous to crap video on a camera. They didn't used to be very good. But newer cameras, my goodness, the quality of video you can shoot, it's getting really good.
Most definitely. And now you can even zoom in video mode. A lot of the times you couldn't before. It would just be standard one focal length.
Okay. So when we think about – when I look at the cameras, if I'm looking at the $90 to $150 cameras, they all have video on it, and they seem to take a pretty good job. But then as we step up into the next class, I see that it's shooting HD video. Is that real high definition? Is the quality that much better?
Yeah, there's 720 high definition, and then there's 1080 high definition. So for any of your TVs that are high definition, you just buy an HDMI to mini HDMI cable. And you can watch high-def videos on your TV.
And what about downloading them into your computer? Is it the same as if you're shooting video from a video camera? It's fully editable. You've got all of that capability?
Yes.
So you've really got a all-in-one camera when you're looking at video. In your mind, does it replace a video camera for a family going on vacation or for shooting the baby and that sort of stuff?
If you want a simple image that just is there for the memory, then it will take the place of your video camera. But if you're wanting something a little bit more, you'd want to still keep a video camera.
The one thing that I think that has to be weak is audio on it, because I just can't imagine that they've added enough features to a camera to be able to record audio well. Where does it stand as far as audio?
There are some cameras out there that have a left and right audio, so it will shoot or record in stereo mode. Mm-hmm.
So, but again, it's you're going to have wind noise and that sort of stuff. What about external jacks, external audio jacks, if you're doing like higher quality video and you want to actually plug in a mic? I don't think any point and shoot cameras have that, but some DSLRs?
Some DSLRs do have that, yes.
So it is an option for you if you want to shoot video. It's not the primary purpose of these digital cameras, but it will in a pinch replace having a video camera. If you're traveling and you want to travel light, you can still shoot some video. And the quality might surprise you.
Most definitely, it will surprise you.
Very good. Susan Amell is the photoelectronics manager at London Drugs. I'm Steve Dotto. This is Dotto Tech. We've been talking a lot about social media on the show. And the one area of social media that friends, colleagues, business people always ask me, Steve, what's your position on Twitter? And I often say, I don't really have a position on Twitter other than confusion. So let's bring on, I think, the person that I think knows more about Twitter than anybody, Don Power. Don is with Sprout Social. He is a consultant and blogger on all things social media, but especially he seems well-versed in Twitter. Don, thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So here you are, a social media guru living happily in Nanaimo, B.C.
I have a dream job that I get to live in one of the most beautiful places in the world and get to do what I love all day, which is tweeting, believe it or not. Yes, you can get paid to tweet all day.
So you can get paid to tweet all day. So in Nanaimo will now become the tweeting capital of the world instead of the bathtub race.
It's changing. Our profile is changing into a technology and a communication economy. So we're moving along very rapidly with those changes, I'm glad to report.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the pressure to understand social media. In all demographics, we are being encouraged to understand what's happening in the social media world. And most of us can grasp Facebook fairly easily, and even LinkedIn and some of the other sites. The one huge area of social media that I think most people do have trouble coming to terms with is finding a place for Twitter in their lives.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, I think Twitter, one of its reasons for success, but also one of its reasons that it hasn't taken off into every nook and cranny of the social media world, is its name. I think, quite frankly, Twitter, a lot of people are put off by the name because it kind of sounds silly. And it isn't silly at all. And so I think that a lot of people who are familiar with Facebook, they stop there because it's a well-known brand. They see it on the evening news. Mm-hmm. Twitter is becoming that way, ubiquitous everywhere. But I think people are still put off by this idea that it's just, it's just a bunch of nonsense. It's tweeting. It's Twitter. It's what is that? I don't know. So I think that prevents people from making that that step, let's say, from being familiar with Facebook and stepping into the Twitter world.
But it is usually the tail end of the same breath. This is my Facebook address. This is me on Twitter. And people see that, so there's this pressure to engage, but they don't understand the purpose. So beyond the fact that it might be a little bit of a silly name, it's the actual application. Is how do I use these little bites of content? How do I make them a part of my life?
Right. Well, Twitter is actually simpler than Facebook. So for your audience who gets Facebook, they should actually get Twitter very easily as well, because it's the status update. It's just that update of what you're doing right now that's important on Twitter. So Facebook has a status update, but it has all these other applications and tabs and photos and all of those things. But Twitter boils all of that right down into a 140-character status update, and it just lets your followers know what you're doing right now. So the immediacy of it is that you can communicate very succinctly and very efficiently with the people in your network.
And really figuring out the content that is going to work for your peer group is the key.
Well, it is and it isn't. I advise people that the main thing to get started in particular on Twitter is simply just to build your network. And there's no real right or wrong way to do it. As long as you're genuine, as long as you're what we call organic, no one wants to hear you broadcast advertising messages all day on Twitter or on Facebook. Our social media is designed to be social and not advertorial. So as long as you're not broadcasting advertising messages and you're being yourself, you will begin to build an audience pretty easily and quickly on Twitter.
If you have something to say.
Well, you know what? I think that as long as you're breathing, you have something to say. I mean, I really underscore that everyone has something to say. And, of course, people are familiar with the sort of common way of thinking about Twitter. Oh, I just tweeted about what I had for breakfast. Why would I care? Why would anyone care what I'm eating for breakfast? Well, the thing is that people will care what you're eating for breakfast, or could care what you're eating for breakfast, in particular if you've just had a great, Eggs Benedict somewhere, and that you can recommend the restaurant for others to go and check it out as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the content of what might seem frivolous, actually has value to people who are following you, that they nowadays, yes, they actually do want to know what you're having for breakfast, because they might want to come join you as well.
Is it essential in your mind? I consider Facebook an essential tool. I think that every adult in our society should understand and should use it. They don't necessarily have to find value in their own lives, but they have to understand it.
Yeah.
Does Twitter carry the same weight in our society, in your opinion?
Yes. In my opinion and in my experience, Twitter is actually a much more effective tool for communication, and actually even more so a tool for business communication.
Mm-hmm.
Really why that is, in my opinion, what the difference is and what makes Twitter so essential is that it makes communication easier than you would find on Facebook, and I'll explain that. On Facebook, in order to communicate with someone, you have to send them a friend request. And if you're a business and you have a business page, you actually have to entice and solicit someone to come like your page before you can actually have a one-on-one communication with that person.
Yes.
Twitter doesn't have that same barrier. You can actually get on Twitter today, right now, and I can, show your audience actually how to do this. And you can communicate with the owner of your local restaurant. You can communicate with the CEO of the hotel you're about to visit in another city today, in real time, right now, without any of the barriers that Facebook sort of naturally puts up in the way. Not barriers per se, more like hurdles, I think, that you have to jump over in Facebook. Twitter doesn't have those same hurdles. So in my opinion, it makes communication even easier.
And we should, and people don't understand what you're talking about. 90% of our audience is going to be a little bit confused. I think I know where you're going.
Yeah.
Is that if you're using Twitter, if the manager of that restaurant or that hotel is using Twitter, somebody on their PR team or themselves are using Twitter, one of the things that most companies do that are most effective social communicators is they monitor mentions of their firm, of their enterprise, on Twitter. I always do. I've got mine set up so that anytime anybody puts @DottoTech, I'm following it.
That's right.
So if you put down that you're going to @whatever the name of the resort is, they're going to see that you're coming.
Yes. And the beauty is of Twitter is that I don't have to ask for that person to friend me, or I don't have to ask for that communication with the person. I just tweet them and they see it. In Facebook, there's a couple of hurdles that you need to get over first in order for that communication to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think Twitter is a much more effective and immediate communication tool, even than Facebook. Facebook is an incredibly valuable tool, And I believe that you should have a footprint both on Twitter and on Facebook,
now,
just to make sure that you're hitting, you know, you're hitting all of the people who are on one platform, but maybe not necessarily the other.
And I think, in the interest of full disclosure, we should point out, how much time in your business day do you spend on Twitter, Don?
Well, again, I'm paid. I mean, I manage a blog, so part of my responsibility is to publish our blog posts.
Let's go short answer, Don. 100%.
And yes, literally 100% of my day literally is spent on Twitter between, officially, you know, eight hours a day, but I actually have my computer on 24 hours a day.
Yeah, and it's always...
And now I use Twitter to communicate much more than I use email, so...
Well, that's it. And as a matter of fact, when I invited you to talk today, how did I contact you?
Yeah, on Twitter. We have public messages for those that we don't mind everyone seeing, and of course we have direct messages on Twitter, which are private messages between just two people, where we are the only people who can see that. So between public and private messages, that's how we communicated on Twitter to arrange this interview today.
I think what we'll do, Don, is we'll leave it here. We'll make this part one of a series of conversations we'll have over the next little while about Twitter. Next time I want to talk about it, focusing on small business people and see if we can do it from that perspective. But in the meantime...
Well, that's my favorite topic in the world.
It is. And in my mind, it's the sweet spot. It's the sweet spot for Twitter. Sprout Social is the website, sproutsocial.com. Don manages the blog on that site. You can certainly find him all over that. And Sprout Social actually is a wonderful social media tool that people should have a take a look at as well.
Yeah.
Don Power and Nanaimo, BC, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation joins us, and Apple's got new iMacs out. They look the same, but they're faster.
They're shiny.
They're shiny.
Yeah.
Really fast.
Oh, yeah. All the benchmarks show a 25% overall improvement on these guys over their previous generations. So they are lightning fast. They've got the option to put in a Big Bad 256 solid state drive in addition to their main hard disk drive. So you could, if you wanted to, have a 256 solid state and a 2 terabyte hard disk. So she's not only fast, but she can also carry a lot too.
Wow. And so I guess the Optum, let's first of all just kind of go through they're the same form factors, the same size.
They look almost identical. Only an incredibly attentive person would notice that on the back of the 27, there are now two Thunderbolt ports as opposed to one mini display port.
Okay. So the Thunderbolt ports, we've talked about Thunderbolt in past episodes, but basically the Thunderbolt is a display port, but it's also basically going to be replacing... In at least in Apple's eyes, it's going to be replacing USB.
And Intel's too. Yeah, it was Intel and Apple's creation, but it's supposed to be actually replacing pretty much everything. FireWire, USB, optical, in and out sound, everything. It's an omni cable.
So in a lot of devices where we first see Thunderbolt installed, it's going to be used for displays, for driving displays. Where are we going to use it first on the iMacs?
Probably for big raids.
Big hard drives,
hard
storage.
Professional storage solutions will probably be the first one out. Those are the first couple things that are going to be hitting.
Okay.
Second, from displays. They did, as soon as they came out, there was a great picture that Gizmodo put out of the 27-inch display, then connected to two other 27-inch displays for a grand total of three 27-inch displays. It was pretty.
No, that was pretty big. They also have the higher-end HD FaceTime camera, so the video conferencing is that much better on these. And they've all got quad-core processors, so just faster. Now, I want to talk a little bit specifically about what a dream configuration might look like, because you mentioned the solid-state drive.
I'm drooling.
So I'm going to get myself a big iMac with a solid-state drive in it. When I go to set that up, how are you guys going to configure that so it's going to be – is the operating system going on the solid-state drive? Is anything else going on the solid-state drive?
There actually are a few arguments even around the shop about what is the best way to set this up, because there's two essential ways to do it.
Okay. Let's just boil back just a minute, because maybe we're being a little too geeky for everybody driving home. So the solid-state drive is basically a hard drive that has no moving parts. It's just like RAM memory on your computer. It's solid-state, so that everything that's there – is accessible to the operating or is accessible to the computer's processor as though it was loaded in already. It's like uber fast.
Yeah.
So in the old days, we used to think, okay, if you can put your operating system there, the computer never has to think. It never has to go back and write anything from the disk in order to think. It's just, it's all there. It's all front of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So is that now that's what we're talking about as far as having a solid state drive, we'll put the operating system on it. Now that should theoretically make the computer just run so fast. But you're saying that in the shop, some guys were arguing with that.
Well, it's we're not arguing that it's going to be faster. That's a given. What the argument is whether you take your operating system and all of your software and put it on the solid state drive and then take your user folder, which is essentially your documents, your photos, where things that are on your desktop actually are in the computer, and put them on the hard disk drive for space.
Okay.
So use that for storage.
Because your photos and music and stuff, that's going to take up the most actual physical amount of space and storage. So putting that on a standard optical media is going to be the best.
Yeah.
Magnetic media is going to be the best.
Yeah. It pretty much, and it also makes it fairly brainless. You don't have to think about it. Okay. And this is the way that Apple will set them up out of the box. So it's just everything's running and you don't have to think about having two drives.
Okay.
The other way to do it, which is, and I will admit, much geekier, is to put the whole shebang right from the get-go on the solid state drive and then move specific folders, i.e. your movies folder or your iTunes folder, and put them on. And then simply use it as an external storage device, simply that's connected. Now, that does require more management, but may be more efficient for your documents. So even trying to get a hold of just the random photos and documents are just going to be lightning fast, just like the SSD, and you don't have to compromise anything at all. You move aside as you need to.
And I bet there might be some people that are going to come up with a third way of using it, which I would, if I was a heavy-duty Photoshop user or into editing, is having your editing files, the files you're working on immediately, just moving them over on the solid-state drive and working from there. Is that something that's going to be considered a lot?
Yeah, and you can bounce it back and forth, too. Like, if you're using editing a great deal 1 month, you can keep all your edit files on the solid-state, and then if the next week you're doing audio stuff, you just swap.
You know, if I'm buying a new computer, it seems almost a shame to not get the solid state drive. I'm kind of lusting for one right now.
Oh, you could even take it and put it into an older machine, and it's a whole new world.
Okay. So there are new iMacs dropping by down to the folks at MacStation. They'll show them to you. They'll make you want one, and then you'll just have to decide yourself how you configure it.
Oh, we don't have to make you want one. You already want one.
You already do. Chris Miller from MacStation.
Thank you.
MacTech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation, who said business and pleasure don't mix? Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
I will remember you. Will you remember me? Don't let your life pass you by.
About 3 or 4 months ago, I received a friend request in Facebook for an audio tech, actually, that had worked on my TV show for many, many years. And I'd lost touch with Dave. And I get this friend request from Dave, and it says, you should be friends. So I said, yes, I'll be friends with Dave. And I just clicked yes. The next day, I went and visited his profile because I didn't have time the day that I actually accepted his friend request. And I was somewhat taken aback to discover that Dave had passed. And it was his family sending out friend requests on Facebook to let people know that this person who I'd known for many years and was an acquaintance more than a really close friend, but nevertheless somebody I cared about, had passed away. And I was torn for the longest time trying to figure out exactly what I thought. Well, I appreciated the information. I thought, this is a terrible way to find out, but then what is a good way to find out that somebody has left us? And then it kind of grew into a different thing, and the fact that they had set up his Facebook page as a memorial page, I went and searched out some pictures and posted some pictures and traded some stories with people, and it all became, for me at least, a fairly positive experience, which was a strange way, a kind of a new digital age way of finding out that we've lost a friend. Recently, Derek Miller passed away. He was a very popular blogger, and his passing was very public. The fact that he was posting about his illness all the way through, and it's had quite a profound effect over the last couple of weeks on the entire blogosphere and the internet community. in researching Derek's passing, I came across a site called deathanddigitallegacy.com. And Adele McAleer is the, that's her site. She's a marketing consultant in Montreal specializing in social media. Adele, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me on, Steve.
And your site is fairly focused, deathanddigitallegacy.com, but it's something that until this past couple of weeks, I really hadn't given a lot of thought to, but we need to think about our legacy online.
That's right. Yeah, I started speaking about this about almost 3 years ago now. And, you know, more and more people are finally starting to talk about it, but it's true. Not a lot of people give a lot of thought to what happens to all your online stuff after you pass.
Yeah, and also the fact that it's such a public and such an openly sharing place, and things like what happened with me, I'm sure a lot of people have discovered that they've lost friends through Twitter or through Facebook or through some of the other social media, and they probably, like I, find it either acceptable or unacceptable, depending on the state of mood they're in and how delicate the information is presented.
Well, I'll tell you, one thing I have discovered after almost 3 years of this is everybody handles death very differently. It's a really unique experience. And this is a bit of a Wild West. There are no rules at the moment in terms of protocol. What is acceptable behavior? Somebody might be totally offended about receiving a friend request from Dave's family in the way that you did. Yet others might seek comfort in it.
Yes. Well, ultimately, as I said, it ended up being a site that I returned to a few times. I still have kept him as a friend because his Facebook page now, and this is something that's become almost common practice, his Facebook page has become a digital memorial to him.
Yes, that's correct. Now there are a couple of ways that people can go about that. They can actually request through Facebook a memorialization.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is that actually freezes the number of friends that you have. So it's not possible at that point to request more friends.
Okay.
The other thing it does is it strips out your status updates. There was one story I'd heard about a family whose son had passed away, and the son used to do status updates as haikus.
Okay.
And the way Facebook works is you don't have to be a family member or next of kin to request memorialization. So a friend of their son's submitted the request for memorialization, and Facebook went ahead and did that. And so not only did it lock the family out of the account, but it also stripped all the haikus from the account.
Oh, so you have to think very carefully about whether or not, you know, how you want to approach it. So I think a lot of people, for a lot of us now, it's an additional thing to consider is what do we want to do with that legacy? Because for a lot of us, our Facebook account, for example, is full of lots of rich memories that somebody might enjoy going through, kind of, you know, tiptoeing through after we're gone. For others, it might be something that they don't want anybody to see at all.
Correct. And it is a very personal decision of what you want. Some people want everything archived, and then others just want to let it all go and let it disappear. Another thing specifically with Facebook is when you do memorialize an account, it takes your name out of the algorithm that is the suggestion algorithm where they say, hey, you should reconnect with so-and-so. You haven't talked to them in a while.
That's a good thing because within a couple of months, if you haven't touched base with somebody or browsed their profile, you're reminded that they're your friend.
That's correct. And when that person is deceased, it can be quite upsetting.
Mm-hmm. And Facebook used to just, to be fair, Facebook is probably struggling with this, as does Twitter, but they used to just, when they heard somebody deceased, just delete their account. And that all changed in 2007 after the Virginia Tech massacres, and they were petitioned by friends and family to say, you know, we'd like to keep these kids' memories alive, and this is a really good way for us to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah. So putting some thought into it, and certainly your site is a great place to go to look at the conversation, is kind of just step one that we have to do when we consider our digital legacy.
Mm-hmm. To Facebook's credit, they are actually one of the few social networks that has a policy around death. It's not a great policy because, as I said, anyone could submit a request for memorialization. They just need to have a link to an obituary.
Okay.
So that's a bit problematic in my eye, but there are lots of things you can do. You can take a digital inventory of what you've got. What are your digital assets online? If of particular importance is anything that you're actually paying for or earn an income from. So if you have a blog that you'd like to survive you and it's privately hosted and you pay for hosting, you need to make arrangements for that because normally hosting accounts and domain renewals are tied to your credit card. One of the first things that happens after you die is your credit card is canceled.
So what happens then if you're with a hosting, if you have a profitable small business site that your family or somebody else might pick up and run with?
Well, you need to make sure that they know where it's hosted, that you've made arrangements for the payment process to be transferred over. You need to make arrangements with your host that mm-hmm. in the event of your passing, that somebody else will be taking it over.
Even something like name renewal will be problematic for sites because of internet.
Absolutely. And the other quite often the problem is that there aren't any legal ways to transfer digital accounts. More often than not, there's no legal way to transfer a digital account.
Oh.
This is a problem.
And we don't have answers for this yet. We only have questions.
We have a lot of questions. What we can do when you pass along your username and password to a family member to take over your things after you've passed, at best, that is giving somebody the permission, personal permission to impersonate you. But it does not entitle them to legal ownership of the digital asset.
Ah, and a lot of people would think that just the fact that you can get into the account gives you control of the account. That's the same as passing on control, but it really isn't.
It isn't, because all of the online services have non-transferability clauses in their terms of service.
Ah, so this is just the beginning of a conversation which will grow in importance as we move along.
Absolutely. This is going to be a very big deal, particularly if someone of notoriety passes away and has a lot of digital assets that are worth money, then I think at that point we're going to start to see some court cases.
We almost have to wait for that to happen and for our process to kind of kick in.
Sadly, that doesn't help a lot of the families who are struggling with this right now.
Mm. A good place to go and at least commiserate and share stories and gain ideas, gain a little bit of an understanding of what you can do to start helping things, make it a little bit easier for your family, especially if you're heavily engaged in digital life, is deathanddigitallegacy.com. Adele McAleer is the proprietor of that site, and I thank you very much for your time. This, I think we're going to have a conversation again and probably in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks very much for having me.
We have a Facebook fan page for people who are interested in who are on Facebook. It's a great way for us to let you know on a regular basis what's happening on the show. Basically, if you make us, if you go to the facebook.com/dottotech and click like, it means A, you like us, which makes us feel good. And who wouldn't want to make us feel good?
There's very few people who make me feel good, so I would like one more.
Hundreds and hundreds of people can.
Or 100 more people.
But it also means that we're now in your feed, so that when we're announcing what's coming up on the show and when we're asking questions, you get that in your feed. So it's a good thing. A, it makes us feel good. B, it informs you. And that's a win-win situation, which is pretty much all anybody can hope for.
FitTech is brought to you by Fit for Work, leaders in corporate health and wellness programs. Your fitness is our job.
PJ Wren is our FitTech expert. Her website, fitforwork.ca, helps businesses make their employees more productive by being a little bit fitter. Now, one thing I get a lot of email on is supplements.
Yes, I know. We get a lot of questions about supplements as well.
And I wonder about them. I mean, there's a lot of myths. There's a lot of, you know, you have
just to yesterday take... I was asked, you got a supplement, you know, of a supplement that'll cut me? Well, no, clean eating and exercise. That's your supplement.
Well, what about just making me healthier?
There's no fast track. You know, if you're getting a clean eating diet and you're taking a multivitamin and mineral, it's going to be sufficient enough for your body. If you're a high-end athlete and you're exercising more intensely and over an hour, then yeah, you're going to need something, electrolyte replacement, potassium, sodium, that sort of thing. But
so
most
those
of
drinks
us,
are worth it for some?
For some, yes. But, you know, even myself, I take Bikram's yoga and oh my God, you sweat like mm-hmm. a pig in there. And yeah. I don't take any electrolytes at all. I just drink water. Once in a while, if I'm feeling a little peakish, I'll sprinkle in some unrefined sea salt and that's got a pure mineral count. But, you know, the Gatorades, all of those are really added calories. So now you're going to exercise and now you've got another additional 180 calories
to
boost.
That's what I'm wondering about because here I'm working my took us off trying to lose some of this thing. And then I look at how many calories are in this drink that they say I need in order to work out better. And they're making me fatter than. So it's, I don't, you don't necessarily need them as long as it's healthy. And the mineral, we really get, most of us get enough minerals in our diet.
If you're eating clean eating diet, but the other thing too, back to the energy drinks, I Googled a 28 Gatorade to see how many teaspoons of sugar it is. 7 teaspoons of sugar.
In a
Gatorade. So, you know, take a look, put 7 teaspoons of sugar in a mug and take a look. That's what you're ingesting. Do you want that in your body while you're working out? Yes, I know you do need it for certain times, such as intense exercise. But most of us, average Joes and Janes, water's going to do you. Just make sure you hydrate beforehand as well as during.
I think we can give people one good guideline. If you're trying to gain weight, go ahead.
We're going to get sued by Gatorade now.
I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid of them. But if you're not trying to gain weight, then you might just want to go with water.
And then other supplements too. You know, I'm a big fan of fish oil.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic, especially too if you find that you get in the beginnings of arthritis. Glucosamine.
Oh, you're talking about taking it internally as opposed to just smearing it on you.
Yeah, so instead of lathering it on you before a workout. I don't know, that may work.
What about those? What about those joint ones?
Yeah. Glucosamine is certain studies. You know, it depends what study you're reading, and some studies it works, some studies it doesn't. Some of my clients, they swear by it. Others, a waste of money.
And I get a sense that it's individual preference. It's like some people do notice a difference, and it's the way your body metabolizes the stuff.
Yeah, but I think anyone over the age of 40, take a good quality multivitamin and mineral, eat a clean diet, and you know, you should be good.
Okay.
And then if your doctor prescribes, you know, additional fish oil or baby aspirin, then, you know, go to that. But eat a clean diet, everyone.
Okay.
You can get it through food.
PJ.
Water.
Fitforwork.ca is her website. And of course, you can visit her blog on our site.
Thanks, Steve.
Brought to you by Fit for Work, making sluggish workplaces into invigorated workplaces. Visit us online at www.fitforwork.ca. App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
It is time for us to take a look at App of the Week. Chris Miller joins me. And I think we're gonna start a little new tradition today, Chris. And I'm just not going to let you get away with giving all the apps. It's going to be dueling apps. Then we'll let the audience decide whose app is cooler. And unfortunately for you, I know what apps you're going to talk about, but you don't know what apps I'm going to talk about yet.
You sneaky.
I am sneaky. It's my show. What do you got for me?
I have a great little geeky app called iStat.
iStat.
What it allows you to do is monitor any of your machine's system resources and what they're doing from anywhere. For instance, this is helpful for those of us who have, say, Mac Pro sitting at home or run servers, and you're away from home. And let's say something's just not reacting that quickly. Your Citrix isn't coming up as fast as you want. What you can do is you can hop on iStat, see what you're using, see what the computer's doing, and see if it's just the link that's slow or if the computer itself maybe needs a look at.
Are you serious?
Huh?
This is the app you're bringing to our audience is like you almost need a propeller spinning on the top of your head?
Well,
you're checking the resources of computers remotely, and this is cool?
This is way cool.
It's cool, but is it relevant?
Yes.
To you?
Yeah.
Okay. This one is almost no contest. I win. My app of the week? Gas Buddy. You load it
Who
on
drives?
Your,
I mean, really? You what are you talking
it,
about relevance?
You load it onto your phone, and it tells you where the cheapest gas is in your neighborhood. Have you ever driven by the gas station, filled up, and then seen cheaper gas, like 3 cents a liter, a liter less a block away?
I've been on the SkyTrain laughing at people fueling up their cars.
Okay, well, you're on the SkyTrain looking at the resources on your Mac Pro at home. The rest of us are driving around. The rest of us are driving around, and with Gas Buddy, you're going to be saving some money. So our apps of the week, iStat, if you're a geek, Gas Buddy for the preponderance of the population.
It's a good word.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation.
I know everybody's driving home right now thinking, golly, I can't believe I'm so close to home and I'm going to miss the rest of Dotto Tech. Well, guess what you can do? You can tune in online at DottoTech.com. Each and every week's show is available on demand streaming. You can go back, you can listen to previous shows. And you can listen to – you don't have to listen to the whole show. You know, you can actually listen to each of the individual elements on the show. We break them out for you. You like that idea, don't you, Art?
Yeah, it makes things so much easier.
Mm-hmm. So we're working on upgrading the website on a regular basis. We have a poll there where we ask questions. And maybe by the time this show airs, I'm thinking I might have a contest up where people can win things.
Like $1 million?
No, not $1 million. It's going to be a BlackBerry, a BlackBerry torch. But my problem is I've got this cool enrollment software where people can register to win, and it's not working yet.
Oh, technology's let you down, Steve.
No, technology hasn't let me down. It's that I bought this piece of software that I attached to the server, and it's not installed yet because the guys in Germany have to install it. It's complex, I know, and nobody really cares, but I'm hoping that it'll be by Thursday morning type thing. It'll be up and running. I could be working all night on it. I don't know when the guys in Germany are going to do it because it's all server side based stuff, and it's
and they like beer. And I promise, out in Germany.
Yeah, I promise we'll never talk about how these sorts of tools on the show, but they do matter because if you can come and enter and to win at BlackBerry Torch, it'll be very cool. Alwyn Hsu from Wireless Etc. is joining us. And Alwyn, let's talk today about phones for people that maybe are a little bit intimidated by phones. Rogers has a phone that's designed specifically for seniors.
Yeah, it's called the Doro, and it just came out late last year, and it's been extremely popular.
So what's the deal with the Doro? It is obviously easier to use, has to be one.
Yeah, it's not a smartphone. It's a basic phone. It's a flip type phone, large buttons, easy to read display, great for making and receiving calls and the occasional text message.
So do we find, obviously Rogers brought this product out because there is some resistance with seniors to learn new technology and to kind of embrace the phone. I mean, their advertising certainly speaks to that fact that they try and kind of soft sell the entire stepping into the digital realm question.
Yeah, well, no, everyone needs to stay in touch.
Yeah.
But a lot of these new phones, they have all these bells and whistles that the average person doesn't really need. So what Rogers has done is sourced this one handset. And in addition, they have some really good price plans.
Okay.
They start as $15 a month and give you a healthy number of minutes, not a ton. So if you're going to be a power user in terms of calling people, it's not really for you. But if you're someone who just wants to use it on occasion, it's the perfect phone because it doesn't cost too much, and once again, it's really easy to use.
And so the features, it's got bigger buttons, which makes it much easier to dial and stuff, so you don't have to worry about hunting and pecking for smaller buttons there. What about audio? Does it have anything special as far as the audio is concerned?
Once again, it's a basic phone, great for making and receiving phone calls. It does have Bluetooth, so if you wanted to pair it with either a speakerphone or a headset, you could do that. But that's pretty much it. There's no camera in there. There's no MP3 player. It's about making and receiving phone calls.
And all just about making it good access. I see when I'm reading through the specs on it that it has a hearing aid compatible loudspeaker. So that's interesting because I know a lot of people have issues around the extra electronic stuff around their hearing aid and stuff like that. So that probably makes it a lot more comfortable them to use. And it basically just kind of allows grandma and grandpa to be in touch and kind of be part of the digital revolution. Maybe they can even, with those big buttons, they can even text their kids, grandkids, great grandkids.
That's one thing that if you come by and chat with us, there's something we can show people and they can maybe get into this cell phone that they've never really wanted, but it might be a good solution for them.
It's called Doro. Or as Alwyn says, definitely not a smartphone.
Yes, that's right.
So the place to go? Wireless, etc. Drop into your local Costco this weekend and have a look at the Doro. Thanks, Alwyn.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
So, Art, we have reached the time in the show when we kind of recap all of the highlights. So, was the death thing what you hoped for?
Well, yeah. I now know what I need to do to sort of prepare myself for the legacy that is Art Factora on Twitter, Art Factora on Facebook. I'm just going to prepare myself.
You're actually going to start taking some steps to make sure that somebody has your password and determine that they can go in and shut down your Facebook account elegantly. And
I can't let
Do you like
down.
The idea of one of those digital memorials?
I do.
I do, too. I think it's a great idea. You know, it might be the only thing left. According to Stephen Hawking, he came out this week and said there is no heaven. And so he's determined that that's it, that our brain is like a computer. When we die, it just shuts down.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of disappointing. And but that's Stephen Hawking saying that. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah,
to be fair, you know, his heaven would be.
He's pretty smart, guy, pretty smart guy, but yes, don't necessarily know if I agree with him. Here's some bright and cheery news from the week. The HP calculator, it's called what's the model number? It's called the C12. It turned 30. Now, why would I be telling you that a calculator turned 30? Are you wondering that, Art?
Yes, I am.
Because it is still the standard for financial calculators in the financial services world.
Oh.
And they still use it. All of the people who do annuities and rates and derivatives and all that sort of stuff, they use this calculator, the C12, to this day. And it still costs, I think, the same as what it cost before. It's still like $80. It is the best-selling calculator of all time. The users of it, got upset when HP released a faster version. They liked the speed that it operated at. And even though there are C12 emulators for the iPhone and for all the smartphones, the calculator itself is still the hero. And there's a great article in the Wall Street Journal about it. And how these super financial geeks, they measure each other as they walk in the room by how battered their C12 is. You know, the real veterans have these beaten up old C12s.
So it's just tradition, not ease and use.
Well, no. The thing about this calculator, if you're a calculator buff, is
there's such thing?
Yes.
Okay.
There are. Is the programming language it used was a special language because of the size of the printout screen. They actually did away with parentheses and equal signs and things like that. So you had to learn a different way of programming it. Uh-huh. So it was very difficult to master. But once it was mastered, it's incredibly powerful.
You're bringing me back to like grade 12 math, and it was a tough time for me, so I'm sorry.
Yes. Was it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I never even made it to math grade 12. All 3 years of grade 10 math were tough for me.
Well, and look how excited you are about these calculators. So obviously something resonated with you.
Well, you know, it's a cool piece of technology. I keep thinking back to my father and his slide rule. And I learned to use a slide rule because my dad used a slide rule. He was an engineer. Mm-hmm. And he taught me to use a slide rule. And I thought that was something very cool to master. And I actually, in grade 9 and 10, did use a slide rule at school, which made me kind of a target for getting beat up even more than I would normally have been beaten up. But honoring these, you know, these tools that are such a part of our lives. I mean, our computers and our technology today is so disposable. It is. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't remember what my first cell phone was. I don't really care. I can't remember what cell phone I used 2 years ago. You know, we kind of go through and technology is very disposable. But some of these tools, like the C12 calculator, people have 30-year histories of using the same, if not the exact same calculator, the same model of the calculator. There's a legacy, and then it's a part of your life, and so I think that that's something worth honoring to a certain extent. That's really about it. That's all we got for this week. Art, thanks so much for your energies this week.
Thank you.
Links to all of the content that we've talked about on the show is available on the website at dottotech.com. There we also go through a tremendous effort to break out each and every element. So if you just missed one of the pieces of the show, you can go and you can listen to that on demand at the website at, give them the address, Art. You can throw it in.
Dottotech.com.
That's it. We'll see you next week right here.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.